It's that time again. Richard Fitzwilliams joining us from the United Kingdom. Still United, I think. And Richard, good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well indeed. A lively week, what with the Screen Actors Guild Awards,
yes,
and SAGs, and also a stunning opening of the Christian Dior exhibition at the Victoria and Albert Museum, which goes on until July, which I must recommend.
Oh, lovely. Let's go on to the SAG Awards, and which is the Screen Actors Guild, isn't it? And the Brits didn't do so well this time around.
Well, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt these are very important awards because the actors have some 1,300 members out of the 8,000 of the Academy. So what you've got is, this is the 25th year, and there's no question that the actors' votes are considered very broadly, pretty decisive when it comes to the acting categories. I mean, there are only five categories that they actually voted on, plus best stunts. And the odd thing about these awards was that they have an award for the best cast, and then best actress, best actor, best supporting actress, best supporting actor. The extraordinary thing with the best ensemble cast was, firstly, they didn't include The Favourite, even though it had three nominations, and they didn't include Green Book, which had two nominations, or indeed even Vice, which had two. They had Bohemian Rhapsody among the five, which frankly wasn't an ensemble because it was a tour de force by Rami Malek, who won Best Actor. But I think you'd agree, it was not an ensemble film.
No, and it's been quite a surprise. And then there's been a few surprises for the likes of Lady Gaga and alike for not getting awards. So there's always a few
terrible
winners and losers, isn't there?
I'm afraid that what the SAG showed is that Star is Born's hopes at the Oscars are, I would say, non-existent now, because it really hasn't done well. I saw it a second time yesterday and I love it. But having said that, Bradley Cooper has faded, and the little question for the best actor is between Rami Malek, who's going to win at the Oscars, who's been winning everywhere, and Christian Bale for Vice, very fine performance, but he's definitely outshone by Malek. And best actress is going to be a sort of consolation prize for not having won before over nearly 50 years for Glenn Close, for a film that's frankly mediocre. She was very good in it.
Yeah.
I mean, the point simply is it should have been either Lady Gaga or Olivia Colman. It was neither. I sound discontented, but we have to take our hats off to Black Panther, because it is a remarkable achievement for a superhero movie to do what this one did. It's grossed $1.3 billion. It's was full of the vibrancy and the color of the African continents and the mystical kingdom of Wakanda. Was the setting. It was spectacular, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes.
But it is just scandalous that The Favourite and Green Book weren't in the top five. Crazy Rich Asians was a very enjoyable ensemble, but that and Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, I mean, fair enough, Black Klansman was very good, but you can't agree with everything.
No.
There it is. Emily Blunt, I've got to mention,
yes,
Emily Blunt, given two nominations, one for Mary Poppins Returns, and then winning for a Quiet Place as supporting actress. That was a surprise of the evening. Everyone knew Mahershala Ali would win for Green Book as best supporting actor.
I still haven't seen Quiet Place yet. I can't remember what you said about that. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, well, enjoy is perhaps not quite the word I would have chosen, but admire, yes. Yes, I thought it was very effective. I thought, actually, the hype was perhaps a little too much, but that was just a quirky complaint. I did like it. There's no question, however, it's a very, very curious win by Emily Blunt, because I would have sworn, with Regina King being snubbed, she will be winning the Oscar for If Beale Street Could Talk. But that being the case, I was amazed. I thought Amy Adams would walk away with it for playing Lynn Cheney in Vice.
We had a similar conversation last year with The Darkest Hour, didn't we? We all re-rated, and lots of people really enjoyed, and it just didn't hit the mark with the award ceremonies. There's always, and the thing is, there's always going to be losers, and those that should have got there, and maybe in another year they would have got there.
I'm afraid, of course, it is the question of what the competition is, and also the various trends of the time play a big part in it. But I have to say that the Oscars are sounding so confused now, because all these reports that say that, John Bailey's the president, he's apparently allowing the cutting of so many of the awards on the big night to get the ceremony on 3 hours. The latest rumor is that there'll only be two songs out of the five sung. So you really got the opportunity of having top performers, and people won't be seeing them because there'll be two, reportedly, not five. If this is the way it's going, the Oscars is becoming so defensive. The problem is one of ratings, I agree, but equally, if Roma's going to win, you're not going to find most people, although I saw it a second time to a packed house, will have seen it. So we will just simply have to wait and see. The Oscars without a host, well, that will cut it down unintentionally. We await to see what happens. But they are in a very confused state with categories such as Best Popular Film, and then they don't think of the criteria before they announce it.
I think they have to be careful of taking too much notice of ratings, because ratings everywhere are down. You know, people are so many different media outlets and so many different things that people have been doing, watching Netflix or whatever they're doing on the night. I think you've got to be careful of ratings. There's nobody that, the British television, for instance, Only Fools and Horses, 24 million people watch it. You know, if they get 8 million now watching something at Christmas, it's seen as a success. I think you have to be careful of being swayed by ratings.
Wondering whether the Academy is getting afraid of its own shadow prematurely, because it shouldn't be making mistakes like this.
No.
And it shouldn't be impossible to have got, perhaps, if not one host, two. I mean, it needs a lot of preparation, but I mean, it's a huge job with a huge audience, and they simply haven't. It seems a bit rudderless, and Lin-Manuel Miranda's just waded in as attacking on the business of cutting the number of songs, because that draws in part of the audience, and also, of course, it's important for the technical categories that this is their one moment of fame. I agree. I mean, we had 4 hours, 8 minutes, or 3 hours, 40 minutes, and it's very long, but it's the biggest, the oldest, the most spectacular show on earth, and it should have more confidence, I think.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the first film then, Richard, The Mule.
Oh, The Mule is splendid, and what fascinates me, and this is Clint Eastwood, and Clint Eastwood directing, but on very, very fine form. And we've only just seen Robert Redford bow out in The Old Man and the Gun, which was that marvelous story of the elderly, charming, gentlemanly, but elderly criminal, Forrest Tucker, who would appear armed, rob banks, and even if he didn't use his gun, he had it. This is the story of the noted Earl Stone, who is 90, a horticulturist, a Korean War veteran, and he also becomes a mule. He's estranged from his family. He needs money since his house has been confiscated. As a result, he tries to transport coke through Illinois for a Mexican drug cartel. Now, this is Eastwood handles this so well. What I admired about the movie was it had rather a confusing beginning, where there's a 12-year skip back from a scene where he appears to be cultivating a rather well-kept allotment. Climactically, we realize what actually has happened, but and he didn't seem to age in the 12 years at all. But equally, having said that, he's on very, very good form, because it's a different sort of a road movie. He's often on the road. What he's doing is taking these huge quantities of drugs, amazing quantities, because he's old, he's white, he's an ex-veteran, and, I mean, talk about an unlikely person to be a mule. You've got him. Eastwood's extremely good. He is also got a couple of surprises coming in this movie, which I will not reveal.
No spoilers.
None, but what is fun is that the movie is rather dramatic. I thought initially it might be, you remember Gran Torino?
Yes. Yes.
And I felt that that was getting a bit slack and tired, and it didn't seem to me to have this... Well, I mean, a lot of his earlier films have had such power, and they've been so amazing. He's got an extraordinary filmography. But what's interesting here is that you've got a central character who's obviously got obvious frailty because of his age, but equally, the way Eastwood keeps the movie going, and the way we also see and get to know some of the characters in the cartel, and what happens when the cartel's leadership change and the cops start moving in. Very good performances. Bradley Cooper playing a cop, and also his superior, that excellent actor Lawrence Fishburne, and also Michael Pena. And so there's no doubt it's a very well cast movie. And we also learn about his family and the way he's been estranged from them, and how suddenly he comes into a lot of money, which makes him quite popular, I would add. There's a lot to enjoy in this movie, and I was very impressed with it.
Absolutely. Ratings out of five then, Richard, please.
Oh, this is getting 4.5. It's very good.
Oh, Augusta. Richard, we're just going to take a... I've just got something to do here technically. We'll have a song, and I'll be back with you with our second film in a moment.
Right.
Thank you, Richard.